From the heart of our nation's capital in Washington, D.C., bringing compelling interviews, insightful analysis, taking you beyond the headlines and soundbites into conversations with our nation's leaders and newsmakers, all from a biblical worldview. Sitting in for Tony is today's host, Jody Heiss.
Well, good afternoon. Great to see you. Hope you've had a fantastic week. We are already here at Friday. Welcome to this edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss, Senior Vice President here at the Family Research Council and President of FRC Action. We have a lot coming your way today.
We continue to have very, very direct conversation with the Israeli government. That's what we're going to do. But how the shape and scope and the nature of their operations, of their campaign moves forward, we are going to have, again, very direct conversations with them.
Well, that, of course, was White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre during a press briefing just yesterday. And, well, according to reports, the U.S. and Israel have moved closer to a consensus on the scope of Jerusalem's planned response to last week's missile attack by Iran. And over the past week, the Biden administration has been saying that the response should be, quote, in proportion, whatever that means, some 200 missiles, ballistic missiles fired. But nonetheless, Israel has made clear that the country's response will be powerful, precise, and surprising.
It's not a state secret to say that we're on high alert here, and we will exact a heavy price for any aggression against this country from any arena.
Well, that was Israeli government spokesman David Mintzer yesterday. And here in just a moment, we'll get the latest when I'm joined by Chris Mitchell, Middle East Bureau Chief for CBN News. Meanwhile, right here in the U.S., early voting is underway in several states, but the results of a new survey that was released earlier this week, folks, catch this, it indicates that nearly 32 million self-identified Christians who regularly attend church services are not likely to vote this election. What in the world are the reasons for that? Well, FRC Action's Matt Carpenter will be joining me a little bit later in the program to discuss that. We'll also talk about what is at stake in this upcoming election. And while much of the media attention is on who's going to take control of the White House, the Senate, and the House of Representatives, the truth is voters all across the country have multiple very important choices that go beyond what will be happening in Washington, D.C. And notably, voters in 10 states, for an example, will be having the opportunity to stand up for life when they are asked to vote on ballot initiatives related to abortion. And in fact, this coming Sunday, Tony will be speaking at an event in Missouri to address that state's Amendment Number 3 ballot initiative, which would enshrine abortion rights into the Missouri state constitution this November. Well, Pastor Phil Hopper, whose church is hosting that particular event, will be joining me in just a little while to discuss that. And to the folks at the Nike Corporation, listen up. The Real Women of America have a message for you.
Men and boys are stealing opportunities,
medals, trophies,
and our future.
And it's not fair or just.
In fact, it's often dangerous.
Yet you refuse to use your platform to stand up.
You say you're for social justice and progress.
So why do you allow men's rights to come before ours?
Wow, that was a clip from a minute-long ad from XXXY Athletics. That's an athletic brand that stands up for female sports. Man, it is so, so encouraging to see young people stand up for what's right. And I'll be joined a little bit later in the program by FRC's Meg Kilgannon to talk about this. And we'll also discuss some new numbers that have been released by the CDC, which, if accurate, it reveals that 3.3% of high school students identified as transgender and 2.2% identified as questioning. Again, if true, those are startling numbers, and we'll be talking about it a little bit later. So as always, we've got a packed program coming your way, and if by chance you miss any portion of it, The website, of course, is tonyperkins.com, where you can find not only this edition of Washington Watch, but many, many past editions as well, along with tons of resources. So be sure to bookmark that website, tonyperkins.com. And don't forget, we've also got resources available to you. If you want to be an informed voter, if you want people around you to be informed as they go to the polls, we have a tremendous voter guide just for you. And we want you to take it. We want you to use it. We want you to pass it around. It's all yours. You can get it by simply texting the word guide to 67742. That'll take you to a link where all sorts of voter resources are housed just for you. Again, that's the word guide to 67742. And we hope you'll take advantage of that. All right, let's jump into today's program. Iran's foreign minister has reiterated strongly that Tehran is warning Israel that they are not going to stand by if Israel decides to attack, that they will come back with stronger defense actions. And so this comes as the U.S. and Israel came closer to a consensus on the scope of Jerusalem's potential retaliatory strike. Well, what is the latest? Where is all of this headed? Joining me now to discuss this is Chris Mitchell. He's the Middle East Bureau Chief for CBN News. Chris, welcome back to Washington Watch. Always great to have you, my friend.
Great to be with you again, Jody, and great to see you in person there in Washington at the FRC event last week.
Absolutely. I cannot tell you how thrilled we were. You actually surprised me. I didn't know you were going to be showing up, and you kind of snuck up behind me there at the Pray Vote Stand Summit. But, man, what an absolute honor to have you there. I can't tell you, and I heard from so many. You are respected here at FRC for sure, but far, far beyond. All right, let's talk about what's happening in Israel. Where do things stand right now? We've had the attack from Iran, and everyone's kind of waited on bated breath as to what Israel's response will be. What's the latest?
Well, as you say, that attack was on October 1st, and that's when literally millions of Israelis went into bomb shelters. I was one of those. I was actually in Jerusalem at the time, and I went into the Dan Panorama and sought shelter. 181 ballistic missiles were fired. That's the second attack, direct one from Iran, the first one on April 13th, when about 350 projectiles were fired. 99% of those were fired, were shot down. Almost all of the ballistic missiles were shot down as well by Israel's anti-missile defense, either the Iron Dome, David's Sling, or the Arrow anti-missile defense systems. So right now, everybody's waiting to see exactly what's going to happen. As you said, apparently, reportedly, the U.S. And Biden and Netanyahu have actually spoken directly for the first time in several weeks, and they're reportedly getting closer to agreement on how what Israel's response should be. Also reportedly some sort of compensation package is being offered by the United States to Israel, and whether that includes armaments and or diplomatic support exactly remains to be seen. But right now, Jody, actually Israel is commemorating Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, found in Leviticus chapter 16. And for the first time since the 1973 Yom Kippur war, Israel is at war right now. And whether or not, as you mentioned as well, the proportionate, what that means exactly, how proportionate will Israel's response be, remains to be seen. What they did in April, and you may remember what President Biden said to Netanyahu at the time, because most of all those projectiles were fired down, he said, you've got to win, take a win. But Israel's response is going to be much more robust this time. Whether or not it's going to include the nuclear facilities and the oil facilities is a big question. Or is it going to attack, some of the IRGC, the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, some intelligence facilities? Or, Jody, I've even heard some people speculate trying to really decapitate the leadership of Iran. That would be something many people would appreciate. Not only many of the people of Iran, but many of the nations in the Middle East.
Well, you put out there a lot of potential options that's on the table for the leadership of Israel. Having been on Armed Services Committee and so forth during some of my time in Congress, Yeah, of course, all of us have been concerned forever with the nuclear development that is taking place in Iran. And boy, that the fact that that could be majorly on the table is certainly not a surprise, but it would be a huge blow, literally and figuratively, I suppose. But what do you kind of think what's going to happen? I know you really don't know. No one really knows. Israel is so great at keeping secret and surprises. But the security cabinet convened with the prime minister yesterday and determining what's going to happen. You mentioned a lot of options. Do you have a imagination in terms of your guess?
Well, first of all, my understanding is that they didn't take a vote at that security cabinet. So it still remains to be seen exactly what they'll be voting on. And then when they vote, perhaps the retaliation will be swift, and maybe the United States may not understand exactly or to the full extent exactly what Israel has in mind. They seem to have kept the U.S. Not informed until very shortly before, for example, the strike against Hassan Nasrallah, the head of Hezbollah. My projections, Jody, is that this will be a important and a significant blow to Iran. But I think also you need to realize the timing. We're just a few weeks away from the U.S. election, and perhaps Israel feels like this is maybe not the first and only opportunity they'll have to strike Iran, whether it's the nuclear facilities or the oil facilities. Certainly they have the option right now because of what Iran has done, two major attacks against the Jewish state. And what they did in April was a very minor response to an air raid radar installation near one of the nuclear facilities. So we will see. I think this may not be the first attack against Iran. That's my projection.
Yeah. And what are we hearing real quickly about there's reports out there of that the IDF has discovered some evidence that Hezbollah was actually planning another attack bigger than the October 7th one. Any information about what that was all about?
Yes, Jody, they found tons of evidence. They found munitions. They found maps. They found intelligence of what they planned. It was called Conquest, the Galilee. Thousands of Hezbollah fighters were meant to go through tunnels. We were in one of those tunnels about 3 or 4 years ago, one of the six that were discovered at the time. But they had a plan to kidnap, kill, murder, take over villages on the northern border, much bigger than what happened on October 7th with Hamas. That's exactly what they found. And they're continuing to find more munitions there in southern Lebanon. And just to add one other note, Jody, you know, as I said, Jewish people around the world, as well as in Israel, are commemorating Yom Kippur, asking for forgiveness. And I would say that it's a great reminder to pray for Israel, to pray for the Jewish people, for their protection as they go through the darkest hour since the Holocaust.
Well, that was certainly how I was going to end it, calling on people to pray for Israel as they celebrate Yom Kippur, but also just all the circumstances that they now are in. Chris Mitchell, Middle East Bureau Chief with CBN News, thank you as always for joining us and for providing your insight. Stay safe. God bless you, and know that our prayers are with you and all of Israel.
Thanks, Jody.
All right, a new survey is indicating that 41 million self-identified Christians, including 32 million who regularly attend church, are not likely to vote this November. Why? Well, stay tuned. We'll discuss it right after the break.
We humbly, Father, bow before you in these moments that we have together, that this wouldn't just be any other conference, but that literally, Lord, you would reset our hearts to be in alignment with your word, that you would reset the city of Washington, D.C. to be in realignment with your word.
There's no politician, including Trump, that can affect the soul of this nation. You're the only one. The answer's not in the State House, and it's not going to be in the White House. It's got to be in your own house. It's got to be in the church of God. It's got to be in his house.
Our principles never bend to politicians.
Yes.
Our principles never bend to politicians. By God's grace, it will be the other way around. Politicians will bend to our biblically based child protective principles.
No matter what comes in November, no matter if it doesn't go the way you want or I want or the things we prayed for, our focus and priorities do not change as Christians. We fight against evil, we stand for truth, we tell people the good news of Jesus Christ, we tell them the truth.
So let's not be discouraged. Don't lose heart. Don't lose the faith. Stand now strong because the Lord has given us the great privilege of living in a time when our choices matter, when our lives matter, when our courage matters. So let's stand together and save this great country. God bless the United States of America.
There are 40 million self-described evangelical Christians who do not vote in a presidential election. If half of those people who sit in church on their blessed assurance would pray, stand, and vote, we would change every election in this country from the school board all the way to the White House.
All it takes, friends, is one generation for us to lose what is valuable, important, and sacred. Every generation has the opportunity to preserve what is right, what is godly, what is good about the United States of America, or to shirk our responsibilities and to watch what happens in just one generation in our country.
This may not be an easy task, but we are living in a moment of challenge, but also of great opportunity. And we know, always, that we are not alone, that His Spirit empowers us and protects us, and that He can do the unimaginable. Dobbs, after all, was never supposed to happen.
Father, we thank You. You have entrusted us with this moment in history, and I pray that we would be found faithful, and that as a result of our faithfulness to You, that thousands, millions would come into the kingdom as they would experience the forgiveness of sin and the new life that is found only in Jesus Christ. Amen.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much for joining us today on Washington Watch. All right, we've got a new national survey that's come out by Arizona Christian University's Culture Research Center, which is led by Dr. George Barna. And the survey is indicating that voting enthusiasm is significantly lower this election year than it was in 2020. That in itself is alarming enough. But the survey also found that a massive number of self-identified Christians who even regularly attend church services, they are not likely to vote in November, some 32 million of them. Friends, this is huge. These are huge numbers, especially knowing how close that this race is probably going to be. So can Christians really afford to sit this one out? Well, joining me now to discuss this is Matt Carpenter. He's the director of FRC Action. Matt, thank you so much for joining me today. Great to have you.
Thanks for having me, Jody.
All right, tell us about this survey and the numbers that it came up with. What do we know so far?
Yeah, well, Jody, as you pointed out, George Barna is probably the preeminent kind of Christian worldview researcher. He's from Arizona Christian University, and he just released a study of 3,000 adults in America, representative of the entire nation, asked them some questions about their faith commitments, their religious background, and more to get a sense of how they're going to be participating in the election in just 24 days. Can you believe it? 24 days. And the results were quite frankly startling. You know, normally you get public polling and you get a sense of how likely voters or registered voters are going to behave in the upcoming election. And so that's kind of, we're used to that by now. You get a deluge of polling every day telling you how the race is shifting. But rarely do you get insight into this population of voters that's not going to participate in the election. There's a lot has been made about undecided voters. How are they going to sway the election? And the value of this study, of Barna's work here, is digging into what's keeping Christian voters from engaging in the political sphere in voting for the elections. And it was just absolutely mind-boggling to see 32 million regular attendees of churches across the country who do not intend to vote this election. And even more startling, 41 million. Think about it. The population of California is 39 million. 41 million born-again Christians, so people who self-identified as people who take into consideration sin and their need for salvation, do not intend to vote in this election. And you have to figure, Jody, if they were to engage and come out this election, they would be determinative of elections up and down the ballot from coast to coast.
Yeah, and as I understand it, wasn't just the Christian community. I mean, there's some 100 million, am I correct? Just people of faith who somehow one capacity or another identifies people of faith that said they are likely not to vote. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah, the total number was, I think, 104 million. And these are people of any kind of faith commitment at all. So this would be people of the Jewish persuasion, of the Islamic faith, Hindu, you name it. They were included in this study. But what really stood out was kind of the political apathy of this large swath of the Christian vote in America.
Yeah. Yeah, 100 million overall, but 40% of that being Christians. Did the survey indicate any reason for this lower enthusiasm?
They identified several kind of key factors, but the primary one is just a distaste in both the major political party candidates, frankly, for president. There's just not a lot of enthusiasm among this group of voters for either major political party. And when you dig a little bit deeper, you kind of find out that maybe some of them are just unaware of who the candidates are. It's noteworthy that the political apathy that Barna measured here among this population is not just kind of cabined within millennials or Gen Z. It's actually also prevalent among boomer and older generations as well. So there's not a generational divide that you typically find in a survey like this. It's transparent across the board, really. But there's also concern, Jody, and you might be aware of this in your own kind of conduct as well, is a lot of voters say that they don't think their vote matters. They look at maybe the 2020 election and wonder if there was manipulation going on. They wonder if the elections have been fixed. And so they're almost saying, what's the point in voting if illegal immigrants might vote, if we're not securing the ballot box? So the questions of election integrity are also looming large over this group of voters.
Wow. Well, these are issues that need to be fixed. Was there anything in there, Matt, that would indicate what perhaps it would take to get these non-voters to go out and vote?
Yeah, the silver lining here in this study, Jody, is that 1 in 6 of this, 70 million, essentially, if you add them up, Christians who don't plan to vote, could be persuaded to vote if they had just heard a message from the pulpit occasionally about the importance of participating in elections, the importance of government, the importance of stewarding the responsibilities the Lord has entrusted us with, including the right to vote, responsibly. And so that's, you move 1 in 6 of that population and you are, again, you're going to impact election outcomes from coast to coast in every state. But additionally, they also are saying that they could be persuaded by a family member or a friend, which is so crucial for the work we do here at Family Research Council with our voter guides and to get education resources out there. So I would really encourage our listeners, take those resources and run with them. Well, because 1 out of 7 of that, 70 million Christians who might not vote could be impacted by just you forwarding them a link, sending them a website, forwarding them an email, showing them a voter guide. So it's a lack of information. It's a kind of an apathy about the political candidates at this time. But there's still work to be done, unfortunately.
And one more time, where can people get those resources and the voter guides?
Yeah, I would encourage them to go to frcaction.org. We've got a tab there called Voter Resources, where you can get access to our voter guides. Our 2024 presidential voter guide is there. We have a link to customized voter guides as well. Senate guides will be available soon for all the key races. We've got a tracker listing some of the Biden and Harris administration actions. So you can share some specifics. If you've got a family member or someone in your small group who wants to know something specifically that's been done on issue they care about, we've got that information for you. We've also got our legislative scorecard there, and then information on how to register to vote. It's really important everyone make sure that they're registered to vote and they make a plan to vote in this election. As you pointed out, early voting is underway at the moment.
Absolutely. FRCAction.org. Go check it out, everyone. Matt Carpenter, as always, thank you so much for bringing your insight our way. Look, there's no doubt there's a lot at stake in this upcoming election, And obvious by what was just shared by us, Christians can have a major voice and can move the needle if they get involved. All right, coming up, speaking of pastors, we have one out of Missouri. Pastor Phil Hopper. He's going to be highlighting what's up in his state right after the break. Stay tuned.
Everything we do begins as an idea. Before there can be acts of courage, there must be the belief that some things are worth sacrificing for. Before there can be marriage, there is the idea that man should not be alone. Before there was freedom, there was the idea that individuals are created equal. It's true that all ideas have consequences, but we're less aware that all consequences are the fruit of ideas. Before there was murder, there was hate. Before there was a Holocaust, there was the belief by some people that other people are undesirable. Our beliefs determine our behavior, and our beliefs about life's biggest questions determine our worldview. Where did I come from? Who decides what is right and wrong? What happens when I die? Our answers to these questions explain why people see the world so differently. Debates about abortion are really disagreements about where life gets its value. Debates over sexuality and gender and marriage are really disagreements about whether the rules are made by us or for us. What we think of as political debates are often much more than that. They're disagreements about the purpose of our lives and the source of truth. As Christians, our goal must be to think biblically about everything. Our goal is to help you see beyond red and blue, left and right, to see the battle of ideas at the root of it all. Our goal is to equip Christians with a biblical worldview and help them advance and defend the faith in their families, communities, and the public square. Cultural renewal doesn't begin with campaigns and elections. It begins with individuals turning from lies to truth. But that won't happen if people can't recognize a lie and don't believe truth exists. We want to help you see the spiritual war behind the political war, the truth claims behind the press release, and the forest from the trees.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Jody Heiss, your Friday host, and as always, a great honor to have you joining us today. All right, this November, we all know by now, big day, and in the midst of it all, there's about 10 states that are going to be deciding whether or not to codify so-called rights to abortion. And the amazing thing about all this is not just legislation. These are dealing with their state constitutions. And among those states is Missouri, where our FRC President Tony Perkins will be this coming Sunday. He's taking part in an inspiring evening of prayer and reflection and action, as he always does, leading the charge. And this is the Founded in Faith event. Tony, there, among other things, will be addressing Missouri's critical Amendment 3 ballot initiative, which seeks to enshrine abortion rights into the Missouri State Constitution, as I mentioned. Well, here now to highlight this event is Pastor Phil Hopper of Abundant Life Church in Lee's Summit. That is where this event is being hosted. Pastor Phil, welcome to Washington Watch. Thank you for joining us.
It's a joy. Thank you for having me on the show.
Well, it's our honor. Listen, I love it when pastors step up to the plate and get involved. First of all, hats off to you. Thank you for doing so. But what made you feel like this was such an important event to host and to get involved with?
Yeah, well, as you said, it's legislation that will do more than simply legalize abortion on demand and sex changes for minors without parental consent. It will permanently enshrine it into the Missouri State Constitution, making it next to impossible to ever change. So if there's ever a time for the church to speak up and stand up, now would be the time. I cannot imagine sitting on our hands and keeping quiet at such a time as this.
I cannot either, and that's why I just say thank you for your role. What would you say, Pastor, to fellow Missouri Christians, fellow Missouri pastors, who might have the attitude that church is not the place for Christians to speak into the political world, that Christians in general even should not be speaking into the political issues like abortion? What would you say to them?
It's one of the great fallacies of the day. Faith has always shaped culture. Culture always has shaped laws from the beginning of human civilization. That's how it works. So Jesus said, of course, in Matthew 5, that we're the salt of the earth. And Jesus today, salt was a preservative from decay. His teaching is very clear. We're to be a preservative from the moral, spiritual decay of the day. We're going to stand in the way of the decay of the day. That's what Jesus has called us to do. And so our faith should very much form our activism when it comes to this type of legislation that is frankly straight out of the pit of hell. When we're talking about giving sex change operations to minors, reaching into a woman's womb to murder the unborn, for what God is for, let our heart break, for what breaks the heart of God. And God forbid, God help us that any professing Christian would stand idly by right now and do nothing, or worse yet, be on the other side, as I have heard some Christians try to articulate, even from the Bible, why this would be something acceptable or even moral in the eyes of God. That would be akin to Christians in the antebellum South actually using the Bible to try to prove the institution of slavery is biblical. There's nothing biblical about this, as you know.
Well said. All right, we have a large audience that tunes in to Washington Watch across Missouri and that entire area. Tell us the who, what, when, and where of this event.
Yeah, this event is going to be 6 p.m. Sunday night, October the 13th, at our Lee Summit campus. Lee Summit being a southeast suburb of so David Brashley as one of the keynotes, and then your own Tony Perkins will keynote the night as we talk about what is Amendment 3. A lot of misinformation, disinformation. So this is a night certainly of reflection and prayer, but it's a call to action. And Tony is coming specifically to kind of bullet point what exactly is in this legislation. What are the implications if indeed it does pass?
Now, if for those of us who are not near Missouri, is this going to be live streamed as well?
It will absolutely be live streamed. They can live stream at our website, livingproof.co. It'll also be on our, I think, our Facebook account as well.
Well, we again are so grateful for what you're doing. I know there are high expectations, high degrees of prayer for this event as it's coming up. And Pastor Phil, I just again want to say God bless you and your church family for stepping up at such a time as this. It's such a critical moment in our nation's history, and we are deeply, deeply grateful for all the role that you were taking in your church family. Thank you.
A critical, pivotal moment. Thank you for all the work of Family Research Council. We're grateful.
All right, friends, I want to encourage each of you, our viewers, our listeners all across America right now, this is a moment of prayer for this conference, a moment of prayer not only for Missouri, but for, we have 10 states that have abortion on the ballot in regard to their state constitutions. So this is a major moment, a major spiritual moment for our country to determine where are we going to go on the issue of life and where is the body of Christ going to go. So again, if you'd like to find out more about this event, you can find out more about it by texting the word Missouri to 67742. And I certainly encourage you and urge you to do so. All right, coming up after the break, Meg Kilgannon is going to join me to debunk a CDC report that is now claiming trans-identified students need more acceptance and inclusion in various policies. It's all coming your way right after the break. Stay tuned.
Jesus said in John 15, "These things I've spoken to you, that my joy may remain in you and that your joy may be full." In 2024, in these divided and uncertain times, how can this be possible? By abiding in Him through His Word. At Family Research Council, we want to help you do that, which is the reason for the Stand on the Word Bible Reading Plan. In just 10 to 15 minutes each day, you will have read the entire Bible in just 2 years. But more importantly, you will be abiding in Him daily. Find our Bible reading plan at frc.org/Bible and join Tony Perkins each weekday for a 10-minute devotional inspired by the daily reading, and designed to encourage you on this journey through the Bible. Listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. And remember, the grass withers and the flower fades, but the word of our God will stand forever.
The world is hurting. Streets are filled with crime. Families are broken. Sin is celebrated and God is mocked. Everywhere we look, the wages of our sin are on full display. As Christians, we know that surrender to God's will is the solution to our biggest problems, but not everyone agrees. Even in church, we hear people say the most important thing is to be tolerant, that we shouldn't impose a morality on other people, and that loving our neighbor means celebrating what they do. But you can't do that. It's not that you don't love your neighbor, you do. But you care about God's opinion more than your neighbor's opinion, and this makes you different. In fact, sometimes it makes you feel alone, like you're the only one. But there is good news. You are not alone, not even close. Research has found that there are 59 million American adults who are a lot like you. There are millions of people around the country who are born again, deeply committed to practicing their faith, and believe the Bible is the reliable word of God. But that's not all. They're also engaged in our government. They're voters. They're more likely to be involved in their community, and they're making a difference in elections. The problem is that a lot of them feel alone too. We want to change that. FRC wants to connect these 59 million Americans to speak the truth together, no matter the cost. If you want to learn more about this group and what it means to be a spiritually active, governance-engaged conservative, or if you want to find out if you are one of these sage cons yourself, go to frc.org/sagecon and take the quiz to find out. The world is hurting, and we have the solution. We can't do it alone, but we can do it if we work together. That's what we're working toward every day. Join us. Go to frc.org/sagecon, SageCon, to learn more. That's SageCon, SageCon, to learn more.
Good afternoon. Again, welcome to Washington Watch. Great to have you on board with us. Jody Heiss, your Friday host, and glad to have you. All right, we are, you've heard it, we've been talking about it a lot, day after day, including today, less than a month away, 24 days away, I believe it is, from the next election coming up, and our country needs prayer. Prayer. Now is the time to pray, and then vote, and then stand. Will you join FRC in praying? What we need, friends, what we need is a spiritual awakening in our country. We need it going into this election. And some of you may be saying something like, I'd love to pray. I just really don't know how to pray for where we are in our nation right now. Well, listen, that is a great question. And we've got a solution. We've got some answers for you. We have a free 40-day election prayer guide that is yours simply if you text the word pray to 67742. That again is pray to 67742. And speaking of prayer and the Bible, I did want to say this. Typically, as you well know, I try to have a segment on Friday for a biblical worldview, our worldview segment. We actually did that yesterday just because of scheduling and this and the other that just kind of unfolded the way it did this week. So if any of you missed that segment and you'd like to catch on to this week's edition of a worldview as it relates to the news, you can go to tonyperkins.com, check out yesterday's program, and you can join me and David Clawson on the issues that we discussed yesterday. Okay, earlier this week, the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, they released a survey on transgenderism and gender identity confusion among American high school students. Now, the data was collected by the CDC's Youth Risk Behavior Surveillance System. They surveyed some 20,000 high school students from both private and public schools. As the legacy media was quick to point out, the 2023 survey was the first to ask teenagers in all schools whether they identified as transgender. But what can we draw from the survey's results? How were they presented? I think it's a very important question. And here now to unpack some of this for us is Meg Kilgannon. She's FRC's Senior Fellow for Education Studies. Meg, welcome back to Washington Watch. We're honored to have you.
It's great to be here, Jody.
All right, here we go again. Our tax dollars at work. Can I put it that way? What did this CDC study find?
Well, you know, this survey gets on the wrong side of me right quick because we have a version of this survey. And I wonder actually if this survey data collection is just a function of the sex, drugs, and rock and roll survey, the parents used to call it, in Fairfax County and other counties all across the country. They ask kids questions that would make anybody blush on these surveys, and they do it in cooperation with the local health department so that they can, you know, basically spend more taxpayers' money. And so in this version, so nationally, they have asked the question for the first time in 2023 if children are identifying as transgender, but they've been asking that question in my county and many other counties across the country for 10 years or so. Wow. So they asked that question on the survey, or they gathered this data from the national survey. Now it's I suppose mandated or standard language or best practice to ask that question now in everyone who participates in the survey, which again is most counties because they link it to the health department so that they can justify spending money to raise awareness about sexual minorities and STDs and all kinds of things for children. So they found that 3.3% of students in this 20,000 student sample are identifying as transgender. They are self-identifying as that. They're answering the survey question to that effect.
What do you think about this assertion? That sounds like really high numbers to me. I mean, I'll just say, well, that. Is this accurate?
I mean, as a parent and as a former teenager, I tend to take these surveys with a grain of salt. I mean, you're giving kids a survey at school and you're asking them all kinds of leading questions. I mean, the questions on these surveys, Jody, are really, you know, it's how many times did you, you know, smoke meth in the last 3 months, or, you know, have you had sex once, twice, or 12 times this month? I mean, the questions are really outrageous. So I don't hold this survey in high regard at all, but I am an extremely biased person in this regard because I've really been annoyed by this survey for many years that they would ask children these questions as if the children are in charge of the decisions to be made in the school system. It is still up to parents and those we give our authority to guide children and to lead them in the way they should go. And asking these kinds of questions on a survey at school, I think, does not do that.
So, look, these questions are shocking to hear. Point one. Point two, there's no doubt this generation is being bombarded with all kinds of voices leading them astray into all sorts of sexual behavior and now transgenderism and all this. Are you still saying, though, in light of all of that, that you question these numbers?
I do question these numbers. I think in some places it's very fashionable to identify as something that is not heterosexual or the sex you're born. And I think it's a way to get attention. I think it's a way to get out of class. I think that that vulnerable children are being led to asked leading questions and led to these conclusions by staff who are not qualified or trained to do so. And I have grave concerns about this information. And I think that this is the kind of thing that comes out in the last year of a presidential administration, because the ideologues who've been laboring at the CDC have one last shot to get out the final misinformation that they can possibly get out as regards this topic. And they know that across the country, legislatures are passing all kinds of laws to restrict their efforts to indoctrinate children in this way and to protect children from interventions and surgery, mutilating surgeries, from cross-sex hormones. They're protecting women's sports. And so this is the CDC's way of trying to have a win on their side for the need for us all to support the idea that boys and girls could be born in the wrong body, which we know is a terrible lie. It's not possible.
Yeah. So, I mean, why does the CDC believe this group is suffering? Is it true? Let me put it this way. Is it true that this group, even if so-called affirmed, like is what we're being told we must do to this group because they're so emotionally fragile and so forth, even if they are affirmed, does that help them? Do their problems go away with affirmation, with people saying, okay, you're really a girl or you're really a boy or whatever the case may be?
Well, that's really always been the crux of this problem, is that to be transgender requires something of literally everyone else in the world besides just you saying it's true. It requires everyone else to go along with your delusion that you were born in the wrong body and that you were not the sex you were born. And that I can't imagine that leads someone on a path to mental health. I think that children are very vulnerable. I think that social media and access to cell phones and screen time for kids is something that is terribly detrimental to their mental health. And it is certainly a delivery mechanism for information that is untrue, ungodly, unhealthy. And so is it any wonder that children are experiencing more mental illness? Is it any wonder that they're confused about their identity when we were conducting this experiment in real time in allowing children access to these devices that are untested for their age group, known to be addictive and proven to cause them mental distress? So I think that they are vulnerable. All children are vulnerable, right? And if you're at the point where you believe that you were born in the wrong body, obviously there is a deep-seated longing for something inside you. We know that is longing for God and for love, obviously, right? But that answer cannot be given in the setting where these questions are being asked, because we have removed God from the public school system. And with him went love, frankly. And so we have a lot to pray about in this regard. And it is really important for people of faith to vote in elections and to keep voting down the ballot. I mean, those down ballot races for your state legislature and your school board and your health department, all of those things are very important. They really affect so many people that you live with in your community and who you love. So we really need to be paying attention to what's going on and vote.
Absolutely. Well, you know, and while you were talking, Meg, you did a great job unpacking that for us. And, you know, I was just thinking while you were talking, it is true that when there is the absence of God, when biblical truth is kicked out, sin enters and sin brings with it blindness. It is illogical. It makes no sense. And it just turns people into all sorts of behaviors that are destructive. But with that, let me ask you, does this apparent gender confusion that seems to be more and more prevalent among young people today, does it persist all the way into adulthood?
No, the few actually good academic studies we have on this topic all show that children who are not affirmed and who are allowed simply to go through their normal puberty and to have therapy to deal with whatever the anxiety, the comorbidity it is that's causing them to feel this way, most of them desist from this idea that they were born in the wrong body and they come to accept themselves. And this would be a much healthier outcome than the idea that you have to affirm these kids with hormones and surgery, make a lifelong medical patient. of children, essentially, through their adulthood when you affirm these ideas. So no, there is hope for a way out. And we have lots of resources at FRC that can help with that.
Absolutely. And I want to give you the opportunity to get where people can get some of those resources here in just a moment. But I mentioned a while ago, I typically have the worldview segment here to close the week. And David Clawson is here, and I always love to end on some good news. So now I'm going to say to you, Meg, tag, you're it. Okay, so I want to switch gears here and end on a good note if we can. So tell us about a recent win for the parents in a Pennsylvania court after school was accused of teaching first graders about transgender ideology.
Yeah, this was a really good news story this week. A court in Pennsylvania, some parents whose children in first grade on Transgender Day of Visibility, these children were read two stories about what it is to be transgender, how you could, and the teacher explained that sometimes parents are mistaken about what body their children are born in and what their sex is. And sometimes doctors are mistaken. And this obviously caused a lot of stress among some of those students who went home and asked their parents all kinds of questions. And the parents were shocked. They were like, why are you talking to my first grader about this? What's going on? And since they were not satisfied with the answers that the school gave, nor were they guaranteed that their children would not be presented with this kind of information in the future, they sued the school district. And the judge came back with a tremendous ruling that just completely affirms parental rights. And it was a great win for these parents, for biological reality, for the truth of God's design for humanity. I mean, it was really just a spectacular decision. And so I'm curious to see now if the school system will appeal. I know they're going to be under tremendous pressure from the LGBT community to appeal this decision. And so it would be great for those listening to pray for the school system, that they will have the courage to stand up for the rights of these children to not be indoctrinated with sexual identity politics while they're in school, especially when they're in first grade, but really never when you're in school should you be indoctrinated with this kind of stuff. And again, it really makes a difference who's on your school board. You really need to know, you need to meet with and understand who are your children's teachers. What kind of books are in the classroom on the shelf for your child to peruse when they're finished with their work? What is going on in your school? As a parent, you have a right to know. You have a duty to find that out, because the school may be in the wrong, but it's still your responsibility as the parent to raise your children.
Great information. A great, great, great victory. Thank you for sharing about that. All right, real quickly before we go off the air for this week, some resources that FRC has that you think may be helpful.
Well, I think those voter guides that Matt was talking about earlier are great at frcaction.org. And then we also have at frc.org lots of resources on how to talk to people about gender. And so we'd encourage you to just check out our website and just, you know, search around on it and find the things that you need.
Thank you, Meg Kilgannon, FRC's Senior Fellow for Education Studies. Always an honor to have you. Have a great weekend. All right, friends, that wraps up yet another week of Washington Watch. Tony will be back in the saddle next week. But I hope you have a fantastic weekend. Be sure to gather in your place of worship and be sure to continue praying for our country. God bless you. Have a great, great weekend. We'll see you next week right here on Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.